This is Passing Judgment, a podcast about the law and how it affects you. I'm your host, Loyola Law School professor Jessica Levinson. Think of me as your personal law professor as we navigate the big legal questions of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers. Everybody, it's Jessica, and this week I'm really happy to bring you a conversation with Tammy Luby. She covers the Affordable Care Act and healthcare policy, as well as economic mobility, as a senior writer for CNN. Most of our conversation centered around the Trump administration and the changes it's making to the federal workforce, including funding freezes and firing people. And we talk about all the details. And Tammy really brings us into this conversation by providing us with all of the necessary details. So I hope you enjoy this conversation. Tammy, thank you for being here. And I'm hoping we can dive right in and talk about your most recent articles, which focus on the federal buyout plan. So just to begin, because I think we all feel like we're drinking water from a fire hydrant, could you kick us off by telling us how this plan started and maybe a little bit about the contours of the plan?
The Trump administration is looking to downsize the federal workforce. They've made no secret of that, and they're trying multiple efforts to get people to leave. So what you're referring to is the deferred resignation offer, which came out in the end of January. Probably about 2 million or a little more employees for the federal government received an email that said, we are offering you this deferred buyout. You'll be paid through the end of September. And most of you potentially, generally, will not have to work. That provision was a little unclear. The unions, who are very, very strongly against this and have told their members not to accept it, they have pointed out that the emails and the guidance that have come from the Office of Personnel Management has been very confusing and somewhat contradictory, and the unions consider this package illegal. So those are generally the contours of the package, but the unions will maintain that the actual provisions are unclear.
So one of the threshold questions, as I understand it, is exactly that, kind of vagueness, clarity. And I know when it comes to a number of these executive orders, again, an initial hurdle in the courts is whether or not a particular program or action passes something called the Administrative Procedures Act. And I know that there's some confusion about what exactly is being offered in this case. Could you remind us how many people have written back, yes, resign, I want to take part in this program?
Well, the offer is now closed. It closed on Wednesday at 7 o'clock. And the White House has told us that 77,000 people accepted the resignation offer. We don't know any details of whom or in what agencies or what tenures. And there's also some questions some unions have brought up that people who accepted the offer may ultimately end up not being eligible. I spoke to one union member who said that he and about 100 people in his local, he works for the Social Security Administration, they had accepted it and were actually then subsequently got an email saying that they were not eligible. And the same.
Oh, interesting.
Yes. The same goes for Veterans Affairs. They were told late in the game that there were about 130 positions that were exempted. So we don't know how many people at Veterans Affairs may have accepted it initially, only to be told later that they're not eligible. I asked OPM this when after the program closed, and they told me that the number of ultimately ineligible people was very low, but we don't have any details yet.
And just for context, because I think 77,000 people feels like a lot, about what percentage of the federal workforce is that?
Well, it's about less than 4%. It's just under 4% of those who were offered. We don't know exactly how many people were offered. There are about 4 million workers, federal workers out there. And not all of them were eligible. For instance, we found out after that tragic plane crash in D.C., The NTSB staffers were made ineligible. There were also the military and the folks involved in immigration and national security generally were ineligible. And, you know, as I said, now we're finding out certain VA positions and Social Security Administration positions are ineligible. So we think around 2 million people total received the offer. So 77,000 is about, is a little under 4%.
Okay, that's helpful context. And for a little bit more context, and again, Tammy, I've been following your work, and it's really helped me to try and figure out what's happening because things change very quickly. Is there a historic analog to what we see here with respect to this? I'm calling it a buyout plan. It's not really a buyout plan, I understand. But is there something where we can point to another administration and maybe on a smaller scale, there was an iteration of this before, or is this just a very different approach than what we've seen in the past?
I have not been told that this ever happened before. I can't rule it out, but there have certainly been offers alongside this deferred resignation offer, which is, you know, specific to the Trump administration. Workers who accept the deferred resignation are also allowed to take a longstanding offer called VERA, which is an early retirement incentive. So there are certainly incentives out there that the administration has offered in the past to, you know, reduce the size of the workforce, particularly this early retirement. I'm not aware of this deferred buyout type program, but I can't 100% say it's never happened in the history of the U.S.
Right. That's my sense, too, which is there isn't a true analog. We can see that certainly other administrations have tried to incentivize retirements, let's say, but I haven't seen something like this. Now, to bring us to the next area that I think people are following with respect to this buyout plan, and then I'd like to talk about firings a little bit. What is happening? So the buyout plan was, I'll just sketch it out if that's okay, and then you can provide some more details. Originally, when it was challenged, a judge kind of put it on hold, meaning that the deadline to say, yes, I'm going to resign was extended. Then that pause was paused. Where are we right now? We're recording this episode on Valentine's Day. What's the current state of this plan?
The current state is that it is closed. You are right, and I'm not a legal expert, but there was a judge in Boston who put the program on pause twice. The original deadline was actually just before midnight on Thursday, February 6th. And then the judge late that day said, you know, we're going to pause it until arguments on Monday, the 10th. Then he paused it again. And then on Wednesday, he ruled that the unions don't have standing. It was a major win for the Trump administration. And at the same time, pretty much the Trump administration announced that the program was closed. So it is no longer, you can no longer accept the offer. And I guess where we go from here apparently depends on the agencies. We know, for instance, that the Internal Revenue Service has said that their employees who have accepted it actually do have to work into May because of the tax season. So it's a little unclear whether, you know, I think it will very much depend on the agency and the subsequent memos. The early memos and guidance from OPM, you know, indicated you won't have to work. You can, you know, go on vacation, look for another job, you know, sit at home, do whatever you want. But subsequently, some of the guidance indicated that it would really be up to the agency, and I guess to some extent your position within the agency, as to how long you would have to continue working or not.
Right. And so again, some kind of questions and lack of clarity as we move forward. Tammy, I know that you've also been writing a lot about, based on your focus on the federal workforce, not just the offer of the buyout, which again, I think maybe isn't the best way to describe that program, but also the fact that many firings have begun and that terminations are underway at the Department of Education, the Small Business Administration, And this is, I think, different from the program of voluntarily asking people, will you resign? So can you tell us, as it stands today, again, on Valentine's Day, what are the highlights of where we are in terms of the firings?
So the next step that the Trump administration is taking to downsize the workforce is they are terminating thousands of probationary workers. And probationary federal workers have typically been on the job for less than a year. In some positions, it's less than 2 years. And the Trump administration flagged that they were going to do this, you know, on actually Inauguration Day, when the Office of Personnel Management advised agencies to draw up a list of their probationary workers, stating that those workers are easier to let go because they don't have all the job protections that career civil servants or that longer term civil servants have, you know, particularly the right to appeal any termination. So many of the probationary employees knew this was coming. It's still unclear how widespread it is. The Office of Personnel Management said yesterday afternoon they told agencies yesterday afternoon that they could go ahead and start laying off their or terminating their probationary workers. And we have been hearing reports across the government, as you mentioned, Department of Education, Small Business Administration, Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the Veterans Affairs. We're hearing today is likely going to be some Health and Human Services divisions, you know, the CDC and NIH. We're hearing Interior may be coming today. So this is definitely very widespread, and it's unclear at this point, you know, how many people. But there were over 200,000 probationary workers in the federal government last year.
Okay, that's also really helpful context, because I think we keep reading about firings and it's hard to kind of figure out what percentage of the workforce this is, who is this, what departments do they work for, what agencies do they work for. So I imagine that members of the audience probably understand what a probationary worker is. Could you remind us, there are some workers who have more protection than others, and it's not necessarily based on probationary status, but I know there are some workers that are classified as civil servants. There's some movement to try and essentially decrease the number of people, as I understand it, who would be covered by civil service protection. While we're thinking about these firings, and of course, we're not talking about the firings of the inspector generals, that's separate. While we're thinking about these firings, could you remind us, and what are the buckets of federal employees that we should be thinking about?
Well, what I think you're alluding to is what has been known as the Schedule F
yes.
executive order, which is now actually the Schedule Policy and Career. And so, you know, civil servants generally, career civil servants who work regardless of administration, you know, there are political appointees. Every administration that comes in, you know, puts in its agencies political appointees who are, you know, designed to carry out the administration's, you know, policies and, you know, views. But there are millions of career civil servants who carry out the government's operations and functions regardless of who's in the White House. So the Trump administration, at the very end of the first term, issued an executive order known as Schedule F, which would have taken some of the policy-oriented career civil servants and shifted them into a new schedule called Schedule F, which would have reduced their job protections that they have as civil servants. So again, on Inauguration Day, the Trump administration is one of a flurry of executive orders that he signed that day. He created the new Schedule F, again, targeting policy workers in the government and the unions and experts in federal service have decried this as the administration efforting to put in loyalists to President Trump, people who are not necessarily loyal to the Constitution, but loyal to, you know, one man in the government in order to carry out, you know, his policies and what he wants to do. And they are very concerned about this, but that is a longer term effort that is not happening at, you know, immediately at the moment. There's also, again, litigation around this proposal or this effort because the Biden administration in 2024 issued a rule that served to try to bolster the protections for career civil servants. And part of the controversy is, and the litigation is, that the Trump administration, in its executive order and in subsequent guidance, said that agencies don't have to, you know, pay attention to the 2024 rule, that they can, that they're, you know, basically dismissing the rule. And an executive order can't overrule a, typically can't overrule a regulation. So that's also playing out in the courts.
Yes. And I will, for another time, highlight the specifics of the legal challenges, but I want to tap into your expertise in covering the federal workforce and ask you, I think when we hear this, again, it's helpful to try and figure out from which departments, what percentage of the workforce, is there a historic analog in trying to figure out what's happening and whether or not it's truly a sea change. I'm hoping that you could help us understand something which I know is very difficult, which is how will the reduction in the federal workforce, and we can take, you know, one department at a, or two departments if it helps just to highlight that, but how will this reduction be felt by, you know, the quote unquote average American, whoever that person is? But because I know this can feel kind of amorphous for people, kind of removed for people, but maybe you could tell us a little bit about what some of these people who are being fired do for the government and therefore do for us.
Right. Well, there are many examples. We don't know, again, exactly who is being let go or, you know, who will eventually in time, because this week, actually, the Trump administration, the president also signed another executive order directing agencies to start what is called the reduction in force or RIF process, which is a standard way of conducting layoffs among career civil servants, you know, not the probationary workers who don't have these rights. So we don't know what's coming yet, and we don't know what the extent of these reductions will be. But, you know, again, I was speaking to the person in Social Security, a worker in Social Security, who had pointed out, now, ultimately, he was told, and his colleagues were told, that they were not eligible for this deferred resignation offer. So they're not leaving at the moment. But, you know, one thing he said to me is that if there are going to be, you know, scores of Social Security Administration people, they're workers, they're the people who are in the field offices helping people, you know, who have any issues signing up or who've had any kind of, you know, disputes or need to have hearings about their benefits, you know, are applying for disability benefits. It's not only retirement, it's also disability. You know, he said there's going to be longer wait times on the phone. There's going to be, it's going to be harder to get in touch with people and, you know, have hearings in the offices. It's the day-to-day operations of, you know, an agency that's very important to millions of Americans. And then again, in the Veterans Affairs, you know, the Veterans Affairs is a huge agency and cares for, you know, many, many people and provides many, many services to our veterans. And, you know, while there have been many positions that were exempted, so, you know, particularly the medical positions, the doctors, the nurses, you know, different therapists and such, they were not eligible for this deferred buyout. But, you know, it's possible that they will be affected by reductions in force or will want to leave in other circumstances. We don't know yet. But, you know, the federal government does affect, you know, many people's lives very directly.
Yes. And I think, you know, particularly when we get bogged down in the politics or the legal questions, it can be easy to, well, for some of us to forget exactly what this reduction in workforce would mean and what the impacts and consequences are.
I can actually give you, I can also give you two other examples that are not exactly about the reductions of reductions in force. But, you know, we also know that the Trump administration has at least, we're not quite clear what's happening to the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. You know, it's the employees have been told to like basically stop working and not come to the office this week. But in speaking to several of those workers, you know, they say that their mission is helping consumers. And, you know, I spoke to one person last night who says that they look at the complaints, the database that comes in, the complaints that come in a database of people who are asking for help, who, have different issues with, financial companies. And, you know, one of the things that they're most sad about, they were also actually let go, but they were not a probationary worker. They were what's called a term employee. So it was sort of a limited duration employee. And, you know, they said that the thing that's going to hurt most is that they love their job. And, you know, they felt that they were really helping American consumers and protecting them. And they're very concerned about, you know, what's going to happen going forward if that agency disappears or is gutted. And you have the Department of Education, you know, again, speaking to some, workers there, they process student loans. So, you know, what's potentially going to happen if the Trump administration restructures the Department of Education? So, you know, there are a lot more questions right now that at this point, because, again, you know, we're not even 4 weeks into the new Trump administration. So things are just getting started and we don't yet know what the federal government and the federal workforce will ultimately look like on the other end.
I think those examples are extremely helpful in making sure that we understand the impact of these decisions. Tammy, in my last question to you, can I ask what you're looking for next? I know that's a really difficult question, or maybe what you hope that your readers and your audience are looking to next. What's the next thing that you think we should be, maybe for lack of a better phrase, on alert for?
I mean, there are a lot of things.
Yes, you know, yes.
The secretaries of the different agencies are only, you know, starting to be named. And, you know, they're starting to take actions. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of changes and you know, new directives coming out of the Trump administration, you know, in multitude of agencies. But when it comes to the federal workforce, per se, you know, what I'm looking for is to see the extent of these reduction in forces, you know, the layoffs, because that's really potentially going to strike at the core of the federal workforce. Right now, what we're seeing in terms of the deferred resignation offer and the probationary workers and these term employees, you know, that's kind of tinkering around at the edges. But there are efforts likely underway to have, you know, a much bigger impact on the federal workforce. You know, another thing that's coming that we didn't discuss is the return to office mandate. So you have, you know, a multitude of federal workers who are either fully remote, meaning they never come to an office, or have telework arrangements that they can, they can work certain days from home. And in speaking to many of them, you know, they're very concerned about their ability to work in the office full time. Many of them don't have an office anywhere near them. And, you know, they say that they work extremely productively from home and that this will, you know, cause many problems, again, not only for them, but for the work that they do, you know, particularly if they're basically forced to leave. But one other point, and I will bring up that is, you know, going to be, I guess, more on point with the theme of your show, is that the Trump administration is also trying to get at the standing of collective bargaining agreements. There was an executive action that said that collective bargaining agreements, contracts with unions that were signed 30 days before the inauguration, are not in effect, whereas the unions say that that's not legal. And there's also been guidance, particularly on this return to office, where a lot of these workers who are represented by unions have these telework arrangements in their contracts. And the Trump administration appears to be trying to, again, get around some of the contracts and say that the agencies can still force workers back to work, back to the office full time, regardless of what the contract says. So that is going to be something that's going to be interesting to watch how that plays out, because I'm sure that will also, be in the courts.
Yes. I mean, it's hard to think of something that we've talked about that will not end up in the courts. And Tim, you've provided us with such helpful context in thinking through what's happening. I think a lot of us read headlines and it's hard to kind of make heads or tails about exactly what is happening and what it means. And your reporting and our conversation has helped me a lot. So thank you.
We appreciate that.